much. So welcome once again to everyone. Thank you in advance for joining us in to today's Adani Green Energy first half FY25 post-earning course. And my name is Ronald from the Murray Copper Assets team, and I'll be coordinating the course for today. If you would like to raise a question during the call, please join us via Zoom application by identifying yourself with your name and the company. You can either use the raise hand function on Zoom to raise your questions audially, or alternatively, you can also submit your question via the Q&A chat box. I'll now hand over to our host and moderator, Mr. Eric Liu from Nomura to begin. Eric, please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald. I think good afternoon and good morning, everyone across Asia and Europe. This is Eric Liu from Nomura Asia Credit Desk Analyst team. And I would like to welcome you to the Fixed Income Investor Call today for Adani Green, post the first half earnings result. With us today, we are very pleased to have the company's management joining today. So we have Mr. Amit Singh, CEO of the company, Mr. Saurabh Seb Shah, CFO, Mr. Raj Kumar Jang, Head of Business Development, Mr. Viral Ravo, Head of Investor Relations. With that, I think I would like to hand over to management team for the opening remarks, followed by the Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. I would also like to mention that we also have Mr. Anupam Mishra, who is the Head of Corporate Finance for the group. So I would like to hand over to Amit to give opening remarks, and then we can follow it up with Q&A. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm very happy to announce that AGL has delivered a very robust growth across all key metrics in the previous quarter. Revenue from power supply rose by an impressive 20% year-on-year to rupees 4,836 crore, backed by a robust capacity addition. Our EBITDA from power supply increased by 20% year-on-year to rupees 4,518 crore, with our cash profit, which surged by 27% year-on-year to 2,640 crore. Now, this superior performance is a result of a relentless focus which we have on project execution and operational excellence across all our sites. Over the last 1 year, we've also added 2.9 gigawatt of greenfield capacity, bringing our total operational capacity to 11.2 gigawatt. This results in energy sales has increased by 20%, amounting to 14.1 billion units. Now, one of the most exciting developments is the ongoing construction of the world's largest park at Khavda, renewable energy park at Khavda, where the 30 gigawatt project is underway. This is set to become a global benchmark for ultra large scale renewable energy development program. This is because of the unprecedented speed of execution which we are experiencing and delivering there. Within just 12 months of breaking ground in financial year 24, we've already operationalized north of 2 gigawatt of solar capacity. And this year, we've also commissioned 250 megawatt of wind capacity using the 5.2 megawatt WTGs, which are the largest onshore wind turbines in India. At the moment, there are more than 9,000 people working actively, delivering on this year's targets and meet our construction program capacity targets for the year. Now let's turn our attention towards business development updates. AGL received a letter of award for supply of 5 gigawatt of solar power to Maharashtra State DISCOM through a 25-year fixed tariff PPA. This gives a significant boost to our contractor portfolio. We have further signed the first CNI agreement to supply 61 megawatt of renewable energy to power a data center, which will help advance Google's 24/7 carbon-free energy goal for its cloud services and operations in India. This is our first step towards decarbonizing the industries, enabling energy-intensive operations like data centers to fulfill their power requirements with cost-effective and clean energy solutions. Our growth is driven by a robust capital management plan, which focuses on utmost credit discipline. Having delivered the intended capacity growth, we completely redeemed the USD 750 million holdco bond in line with our commitments made to you. resulting in systematic deleveraging. Additionally, we have strengthened our partnership with TotalEnergies by forming a new joint venture comprising a 1.15 GW renewable portfolio, wherein we have received an investment of $444 million from TotalEnergies. We're equally committed to maintaining our highest standards of environmental, social, and governance practices. AGL is proud to be the first renewable energy company in India to join the Utilities for Net Zero Alliance, and we have retained our top ESG rankings in the latest assessments by various global agencies over the last quarter. With that, I'd like to pass it back to you for any questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Imran. Once again, kind reminder to investors on the line, if you would like to raise a question, there are two ways to do so. The first one would be using the raise hand button on Zoom, and we will unmute your line, and you will be able to speak directly with management. Alternatively, you can leave a message in the Q&A box, and we can attend to it later on. Thank you very much. Okay, first question is coming from Siran. Your line is unmuted. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to. Yeah, thank you. I want to ask about the capacity growth. I mean, I understand that first half growth was only 250 MW, and part of this is because of monsoon season, which slows things down. I just want to get a sense of your full year capacity growth. Do you still stick to the 6 GW target, or there's some slowing down? We recently read some news from Bloomberg that SECI seems to be slow in terms of signing PSAs with DISCOM. That has held up a lot of PPAs to be signed. Just want to check, do you foresee this as one of the growth bottlenecks? What is the, again, capacity growth and CapEx target this year?
Yeah. Siran, I think to answer your first question, you're right. I think the monsoon season in India extended by a month beyond what was anticipated. You know, but we take into account these ups and downs in weather patterns, and we manage them without changing our program and timelines. As you know, in construction projects, you have a variation of ±10% in the S-curve, and this was kind of budgeted. I think it will stretch our targets, but we are still reaffirming our end-of-the-year targets, and we plan to deliver one-third of that capacity in the current quarter and the remaining towards the end of the quarter. You know, we look at these construction projects over a three-year time horizon. We make sure that we procure the long lead items, we install the balance of plant, and we essentially have a factory running in Khavda, where we are looking at delivering at scale and keeping our run rate of 6 GW per year at AGL level. That is our aspiration, and we are well on our way to deliver that. There will be obviously construction-linked uncertainties, ±5%-10%, which we will know better by end of the year. Yeah, we are still keeping our target number as we had mentioned earlier. Your second question was around PPAs, and you know, I think some of the report you mentioned. See, we don't get affected. Our projects have signed PPAs, and you know, we have some merchant projects we are commissioning where the realization of revenue is actually quite solid, especially on the wind side. We are in a very good shape there, and that does not affect our execution or in any way slow us down. Although that may affect other players in the country, and that is a genuine concern, I think, that was raised there, but we are well protected from that, and we have a very good execution pipeline for the next 3 years.
I see. For this year's 6 GW and FY 2026, and maybe another 5 GW-6 GW, all of this, the PPAs have already been signed?
Yeah, yeah. I think either the PPAs have been signed or they are on merchant capacity, so we will not be signing fixed-term PPAs. We will be having bilateral deals and C&I agreements, or we will take advantage of the spot market as well.
Yeah, thank you. Just can I follow up on one question, regarding the recent bond issuance plan, that after you withdraw the plan, what is the next step for that? Because I think the optimal financing choice is still to avail the construction facility to use that in next phase of a CapEx, right? So what's the thought about that?
So Amit, I'll take that, Amit. So I think Zinnen, you're right. That is still continues to be our optimal strategy. We are reconfiguring the projects there, and we will be we had outlined to the market that the bond has not been pulled; it has been rescheduled. So we deferred. So we saw that there is some market volatility, and you can see how the treasuries ran up and how the treasuries have been running up in the last say few days. So we will do this post the US election. So again, timeline, windows, schedules, et cetera, are all subject to final market view as well as the decision of the Adani Green Board. But we do intend to come back to the markets in the same construct. And the deals are investment grade rated. It is the largest green bond out of Asia. It is the largest project bond out of Asia in the last 7 years. So from that standpoint, the fact that it is investment grade rated from both the rating agencies makes it a very, very attractive asset class from an investor standpoint as well. So we don't see any major hiccups or changes to that long-term capital management strategy.
Okay, thank you. I'll go back to the queue.
Thank you, management, and thank you, Shinran. Kind reminder again to investors online, if you would like to raise a question live, please use the raise hand button on Zoom, and then we can prompt you to unmute. Alternatively, you can also use the Q&A box to leave a message there, and then we will attend to it later on. Thank you.
Hello, this is Eric. I think meanwhile, waiting for investor to raise hand for audio question. I think we see some question from the Q&A box. I think generally they are referring to US dollar bond. So I think some follow-up is that what are the alternative funding channel if, let's say, you cannot refinance post the US election, given that maybe market will be a little bit volatile, what could be the backup plan?
Anupam, do you
want to
do that?
Yep. So again, as I outlined in the earlier question, I think from our perspective, $1.2 billion is what the earlier bond was for. This was for four specific assets, all of them hybrid projects with capacities of about 1840 megawatt. These included a 700 megawatt PPA with AEML, and the balance were PPAs with SECI. And we will reconfigure these two project sets. One project set will go to the international bond market under the exact same 144A Regis format, similar kind of 20-year tenors, and average maturity 12, 13 years, 14 years. And then the second set of assets we...
Anupam, they're not able to hear you. So just to kind of complete the answer there, I think the bond markets do seem to be pretty much there for us in terms of the financing that we need to do. But just in case, as the question is, I think we have all the other options available with us. We have the domestic banking and financial institutions. We have the international banking and financial institutions. And we have other routes of private placement. So we have all the options available to us. And this is, as Anupam said, it's an IG-rated paper. It's the highest quality assets that you can get out of India. So that's what I think.
Got it. Thank you. I think one more question is from investor is regarding the question is about why there's a decline in EBITDA from a quarter-over-quarter basis. Thank you.
So this is more of a seasonal variation because of which it happens. So the way the seasonality works for solar, wind, and also to some extent there is been some extended monsoon. But if you look at where we stand compared to our PPA commitment, we are consistently generating well above our PPA commitments. And there is also a multi-year seasonality. So there may be some years when you'll have some monsoon-related effects. There will be other years which will be better off. So from that perspective, the long-term return profile remains intact. In fact, with all of the de-risking that we do and all of the efficiencies that we bring in at the project development level, at the O&M level, we're actually doing much better in terms of the return profile for the projects.
Yeah, I think if I can add on it, I think if you look at the CUF levels across India this year has been lower than long-term average. So as a result, I think some of these numbers you might see lower because we had extra monsoon season this year, which extended longer than usual. But I think we should look at long-term numbers. I think sequential numbers, seasonality is always there. For comparison purposes, we should see year-on-year numbers just to take the seasonality out of the equation for like capacity. But I think if you compare it with India, I think our CUF numbers are much healthier than the India average.
Thank you. Again, for a reminder, if you want to ask question, please use your raise hand button, or you can type in your question in the Q&A box. The next question is also from the test question. It's talking about how do we plan to fund the additional capacity increase? I think we did mention something that we are trying to reschedule the project. I think maybe you could also offer more color. How's the capacity addition going forward in this fiscal year and next fiscal year also? And then one more question, I think it's still referring to the funding channel, but I think we have been addressed. I guess the question will be more about any plan to do a private placement? Thank you.
So Eric, I'll take both of those questions. So the first question with respect to how are we looking to fund our construction projects, I think that we look at broadly two avenues to fund all of our under construction projects. One is from the international banking market in the format of 5 to 6 year loans. These are mini perm loans, which are for construction. As soon as the assets become operational, the pricing steps down, and we have about $3 billion of such loans. In addition to that, there are additional lines available from the banks, which we will look to draw upon for the construction projects. The second option available is from the domestic market, PFC, REC, SBI, namely the three key large lenders. In addition to the SBI, there are other public sector banks in the country who are also funding under construction, renewable project construction. And that includes all kinds of technologies, not only classical solar wind projects, but also solar wind hybrids and also pumped hydro projects. And in addition to that, if we were look to go into battery, that is something that can also be funded from that market. The third aspect is for operating projects, which are operational. We have four avenues to look at taking out. The longest tenor paper is available in the 144A REGS and the PP markets. We have not yet done a PP bond in the renewable space. We have done two PP papers. One is in Mumbai Airport, which our airports company has done, and we have done one in our transmission business, which was done in 2020. So this market for investment-grade rated renewable issuances, that market is open and available for transactions to be done in the PP space. 144A REGS, we have done two bonds. We did a holdco bond, which we repaid also earlier this year. The third avenue available is in the domestic DCM market, where we have tapped that in RG1. And in addition to that, we are currently looking at multiple other onshore DCM projects. These are more in the range of 8, 10, 12, 15-year funding financing available. And that's something that we're looking to tie up. The fourth avenue is there is a banking market available for operating projects, again, domestic and international. For domestic, you can go for longer tenors as well. International is more in the 5 to 7 year range. So financing availability for renewable projects is today available from multiple sources. We, as a company, have been focused on diversifying our financing sources as much as possible and with a focus on reducing our overall cost of capital. And that plan has been there, and that plan continues in that format. I can give more color if required.
Thank you, Anupam. Also, I see a follow-up question. I think it's still referring. So after the current US dollar bond situation, how's the additional capacity expansion going forward? Like, is there any guidance? Are we still sticking to 5 to 6 gigawatt annual capacity add, or how does it looks like at the current development?
I can tell you that there's been no impact of the deferral of the bond on anything that goes on above EBITDA, that any business projections or our own business strategy and planning. There is no change in that.
Yeah, and to add, I think when you look at the way we work on our construction projects and how we execute, we really have a 3-year view of procurement, construction planning, mobilization, balance of plant construction, and because of the monsoon season, there has been a bit of a pressure on meeting targets. But these are within the limits of plus minus 10%, which we have in a construction cycle typically. So we are restating that we are going after the aspirational numbers of 6 gigawatt, which we talked about earlier in the year. We are very advanced stages of completing 1/3 of that capacity within this quarter, and the remaining will be delivered in a rolling fashion towards end of the financial year, FY25. Keeping in mind that there are sometimes construction credit issues which could arise, but we are very confident that we will be in that neighborhood.
Thank you. I think some of the question has been addressed. I guess just maybe still one follow-up. I think one investor were asking about after this US dollar bond pool, will this affect the ratings?
Anupam, do you want to take that?
Sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
I think the question will regard like how's the rating agencies view maybe across, I mean, on the rating, I guess, across to the consolidated group or this kind of this round of LG bond.
No, I don't, as I said, we don't have any bonds outstanding at Adani Green Energy level. So there is no impact on from a rating agency's point of view also with respect to this bond. I think they fully understand what happened here, and the fact that we are deferring the bond is normal practice. So that doesn't really impact it from their perspective.
Thank you. I think we can switch to I see a raise hand button, so we can switch to the investor, Ronald.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. So next question is coming from Jocelyn. Jocelyn, your line's unmuted. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me well?
Yes, please go
Yeah,
ahead.
please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, thank you for the presentation. I think earlier when you explained on, the assets that you may look to, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm talking about the new RG3 bond that was recently delayed, right? So earlier, I think there was some explanation where you were trying to give us color on how you may do it in two different capacities. I think you are probably referring to lowering the issuance size. Could you possibly elaborate more on this? Because I think earlier you were cut off. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll again answer that question, Jocelyn. So there are four assets, four SPVs, which were part of the HRG1. We're not calling it RG3, we're calling it HRG1, because we want the market to get used to hybrid RGs, right? So RG1 and RG2 are more solar RGs. HRG1 is a hybrid RG. So in HRG1, you had four SPVs, and three of those SPVs had PPAs with SECI. One of those SPVs had a PPA with AEML. The AEML PPA was 700 megawatt. The SECI PPA was 1140 megawatt. So what we will now look to do is reconfigure the projects in which were sitting in into HRG1 so that we can solve it within the dollar bond market under the exact same structure that we did. And the second one will be in the domestic market, bank market, and all the other sources that I just outlined. So keep some patience. I think once we've got the US elections out of the way, we will look to see for a window, and that's when we will update the market on the issuances. It will be smaller than $1.2 billion for sure, and it will be solving for the entire stack for $1.2 billion, just that we will split it into a dollar bond and then a domestic bond, so that a domestic bond slash a bank solution, so that we don't bring that supply into the dollar bond market.
Thank you. That is clear. But do you have any color in terms of the one that you're going to bring to the dollar market? Is it going to be full SECI, you know, as an off-taker, or is it a combination of SECI and AEML?
Then there's nothing left to say. If I said tell you that, then it'd be full. But I think as of now, something that is an internal discussion going on. There are discussions going on. We are updating the documents as we speak. So for me, that information is, until and unless we made it public, it will be difficult for us to give you any color on that, right?
Yes, fair enough. Thank you. Another question that I have is on your hedging. I think the HRG one came out with, I think you mentioned that you will retain any gains realized at each swap rollover in a dedicated reserve account. And at the same time, there is also a requirement to make good any cash shortfall if, let's say, there is a mark-to-market losses. That is for the HRG1. So I wanted to understand this when compared to RG1 and RG2. I believe that retaining the swap gains is probably there for both RG, but what about making the cash deposit into the reserve account in the event of a mark-to-market losses? Is it there for the both RG1 and 2? Thank you.
RG1, yes. In the recent offering that we did in March, it was there. It was not a part of our 2019 bonds, both RG1 original and RG2 that we had done. So we introduced this in our recent deals, and this is going to be a part of all of our future deals as well. It's basically a part of tightening the credit element and making it even more attractive from an investor standpoint, reducing the risk profile of the assets. So from that standpoint, we've done this.
Thank you. Is there any, are you considering to do this the same for RG2?
No, so RG2 is a bond that has already been issued. What we have done is, by practice, we have showcased that even though it is not a covenanted requirement, we always maintain cash equivalent to ensure that whatever is the hedging gains or losses, they are remaining in the company. So that has been demonstrated by practice. And if you see in all of our compliance certificates, we try to ensure that there is enough cash balance in the company, which covers for these eventualities as well. So we are covering that under the prudency covenant provided under the RG2. It's a catch-all covenant in RG2. In addition to that prudency covenant, we are also doing this as a specific covenant in RG1 and the new HRG1.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, management, and thank you, Jocelyn. Just another quick reminder to investors on online, if you would like to raise your questions live, please use the raise hand button on WebEx, on Zoom. Alternatively, you can also submit your question via the Q&A box. Thank you.
Thanks, Ronald. I do see a couple of questions regarding maybe foreign US dollar bond, but I guess the company already well addressed. I think just given some time and see the further development. Meanwhile, I think there's one interesting question. So on the recent news of China solar module bottoming out, do we see this impacting the cost for the company? Thank you.
Amit,
yeah, I think... I think no, absolutely. I think the solar module prices continue to fall down, and we are in a very unique position where we have some of the PPAs where we can import solar modules from China, which gives us again accretive returns. We are taking advantage of that, and our suppliers are very happy to pass on that reduction in cost to us. And that will get reflected in our CapEx position and improved returns position. So no, this is a good thing. I think on a long term, I think we are not, that may not continue to fall. So I think there is an end game to this. So we are making sure that we have an alternative supply chain ready as well. And we are working with different companies, including Anil as well, which is our sister firm, to make sure that we have a captive, position where we can use that for our future projects as well. And along with other companies we are working with to for our development needs.
Thank you. I think there's also a further follow-up. So how do you think the potential inclusion of the solar PV shell in ALMM, and how much will that impact the cost and IRR? So at this time point, how do you source your solar panel or module? How much source from the in-house capacity in terms of the capacity expansion? Thank you.
No, so we don't have an AGL in-house capacity. I think every time we have to procure, we go out in the market and we get the best deal. We don't always look at our in-house capacity. Some of the solar modules, we are procuring from China are in single digits. I would never have thought that this would happen, but here you go, it's happening. And that gives us a lot of comfort in our CapEx planning and future projects. For this, typically, our returns have always been, as we have told you, double digits. I think, but this is beyond high teens, right? So on long-term PPAs, and when it comes to merchant contracts, this will go even further. With the ALMM, I think the module market is very much, India has 45-50 gigawatt of capacity, and which means that the construction projects are very well secured, and we have tie-ups, like I said, with a few companies to match our execution timeline, and we're able to import some of the cells from China or use some of the cells made here, and absolutely de-risk for the next 2 years.
Got it. Thank you. I think there's a one test question referring to the U.S. private placement. I think it's referring maybe some color could be provided, how's their demand. So the question is that how eager do they sound in wanting to invest in, let's say, a potential Adani Green algae private placement? And what would be the key challenge, issue, or concern they have when they look at your potential deal? And there is a current roadblock of unlocking the access to from U.S. private placement, given they have already funded the Adani transmission asset. I guess maybe it's more referring to any, let's say, for this private placement investor, do they have, let's say, a group credit limit against the Adani Group, or they will separate to look into a different entity with a separate credit limit from their side? Thank you.
No, so it's a good question. I think the way I'll outline this is that not only has Adani not raised U.S. private placement market for renewables, nobody in India has done it. So the U.S. private placement market is not fully aware of the underlying PPA structure, the contract structure, and how does the market look, what is the counterparty credit profile, etc. Now, these are things that when they did the Adani transmission transaction also, they took a lot of time to understand the structure. And when they completed their analysis, they came to the view that this is global standards, and the nature of the contract provides them the similar amount of comfort that what they get in, say, US or other developed markets with respect to the transmission sector. And the merchant risk element or the market risk element is absolutely not there in those projects. Similarly, in renewables, I think the first step will be to getting over the contracts and understanding the underlying risks in the business and how are they mitigated. And then will it come to discussions around this. So I think both conversations are ongoing, both with for renewables, because that's a long-term area where we want to issue. IG is something that we have now been able to establish to the market that it is doable. In addition to that, this contract analysis. And the second one is transmission, where so both of those discussions are ongoing. I think in terms of order, you will first see transmission going through, and then you will see renewables coming in that market.
Thank you, Anupam. There's one question regarding the business operation. So the question is on the RGs. So why did RG1 and RG2 generation volume drop in the first half fiscal 25 on a year-over-year basis? And how does it compare to the P90? Thank you.
I think when it comes to this year specifically, India experienced a drop in some of these for RG1 and RG2. So I think let me get Viral to involve and maybe explain some of the seasonality factors relating to RG1 and RG2 portfolios.
So, I mean, I would say that at the AGL level, there is some drop. But if you look at RG1 and RG2, in fact, there is not much of a change. You can see that if you look at the every year generation which is there, it is pretty much consistent. It is a small change in the number of units, which is primarily on account of solar irradiation changes, which is fairly seasonal to happen. And what you can see again here also, which we've kind of started highlighting now, is that the PPA commitment against that, we are consistently generating much more than required. And in terms of P number, I think RG1 is close to P60, RG2 is in fact close to P50.
Yeah, so P90 number is around 22.7%. So we are well above that number as well.
Got it. Thank you. Got it. Thank you. Just a time reminder, if you want to ask question, please raise your hand or you type the question in the Q&A box. Thank you. Okay, there's one question. So seems the I think it's more related to the market situation right now. So the question is regarding to the US Treasury has moved 20 basis points since you reschedule the proposed US dollar bond transaction. Are you willing or have you recalibrated the internal pricing as of that?
No, we don't do that, Eric. We don't do that daily basis because treasuries do move. So whenever the board will take a decision for coming back to the market, I think all this analysis would be presented. But as on a regular basis, we don't factor in daily hedge treasury movements into figuring out what should be our pricing expectations. We have a sense on where our pricing should land as on a spread basis. And to that extent, we would definitely take this into consideration. One important factor to also note is as US treasuries increase and Indian interest rates remain the same, the hedging costs go down. So that is another factor that keeps working, that even though you're paying a slightly higher elevated overall dollar yield, but your hedging costs have come down. So on a rupee basis, we are not impacted as much. So those are the few interplays that are here.
Thank you. Okay, I also saw a test question. So I mentioned it. So what is the future growth plan split between hybrid or retail storage versus a plain vanilla solar and wind asset? And what's the plan for the CAFTA 30 gigawatt that is the solar part? Thank you.
So can you repeat the question?
Sure. So what is the future growth plan split between the hybrid with or without storage capacity and compare with the plan when in a solar wind asset? What is the plan for the CAFTA 30 gigawatt solar park?
Yeah, so Khavda is a very unique land bank. I think let me step back and talk about it a little bit. Khavda has a land area of the total land area where we are developing is 538 square kilometers. And, you know, when we project, you know, when we look at the solar radiation and the wind speed, it is a place which is blessed with the best of both. The wind speed average is around 8 meters per second, and that makes it one of the finest locations to install wind turbines as well. And which is why we've chosen to go with the 5.2 megawatt scale wind turbine, which is the highest rated capacity turbines in India. And we have already commissioned excess of 250 megawatt of wind turbines this year. And we're accelerating that installation with the ambition to get to around 4 gigawatt in Khavda for wind. And the remaining 26 gigawatt will be on solar. Now, this is as per current technology and current land use. This number will only grow because, as you know, the watt peak per module is improving, the ratings are improving. So we expect that the number for total Khavda will be 30 with a split of 26 and 4 nearabouts. At the same time, the battery prices have fallen quite significantly, and we are going to use this to our advantage as well, because we have the connectivity available at this site. And as you know, that most of this connectivity is for daytime use. So with use of battery at Khavda, we will also be able to take advantage and provide peak time power in the evenings as well. So that will add to further storage capacity in Khavda. And this decisions are made based on maximizing our returns. And we are actively looking for opportunities where we are tendering and bidding and for long-term projects, but also any of the, you know, CNI customers who are asking for round-the-clock solutions, like the ones who are setting up data centers, who are asking for very reliable long-term power demand. So that's the way we look at this, and we are absolutely very thrilled with the positioning we have in Khavda.
Thank you. I think so far there's one more remaining question. So the question is about the hybrid project. So what is normally the hybrid project's IRR? It seems very different from the 7 megawatt optaken by the AEML versus the rest of the SEGI project in your hybrid algae portfolio.
So typically, when we look at projects, we look at high teens equity IRR as the base threshold when we look at these projects when we bid. And we try to basically maximize the IRRs by bringing in efficiencies at the project development level and the O&M level and then capital management. For us, basically, it's hybrid is a mix of solar and wind. So for wind, you have to be a little conservative in terms of building the assumptions, given that there are more variations in the wind speed. Solar is where you will have more confidence in terms of what kind of solar irradiation you should expect, because there is lesser variation. So for us, it is essentially one and the same. We typically look at high teen equity IRRs and then try to maximize across all the projects that we entered.
Yeah, just to add to what Viral said, I think the question is more focused on two things, that the tariff in the AEML project was higher as compared to the SECI projects. Does that mean that the returns in AEML were higher? The answer is no. The reason that the tariff is higher in AEML is primarily on the account of a higher PLF requirement under the AEML PPA. Because there was a higher PLF required, there was more capacity set up. There was a higher wind proportion. If you see the split of wind between the solar, the SECI hybrid PPAs and the AEML hybrid PPAs, the wind capacity was higher. Wind capacity gets added at a higher tariff, at a higher capex cost as compared to solar. Wind has more variability, which we touched upon. And hence, from the wind standpoint, that was the reason why the AEML tariff was higher. Returns on both projects will meet and beat the thresholds that we outlined, that it will be higher than high teens equity IRRs, we were close to 20 or more than 20%. And yeah, and that's true for a bulk of the projects that we are building. There is further upside on account of what Amit touched upon earlier. That is in the under construction projects for us today, with the module prices going down, we're getting a further upside on account of CapEx cost.
Thank you. So hi, Ronald. May I know if there are any further questions from investor before we handing over the call to the management for closing remarks?
Currently, there's no one raising their hand on Zoom. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, maybe we can give maybe 10 or 20 seconds. If no, then we can, I will mention.
Sure.
Okay, given there's no further questions, so I will now hand over the call to the management for closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. It's exciting time to be in Adani Green, where we are really focusing on two things. One, maximizing our execution, making sure that we deliver on our targets, we deliver on the timelines which we talk about, and make sure that, you know, we keep within the construction schedule certainty and we manage it well. And second, we will tie up these capacities at accretive returns. We believe we can grow our returns profile in projects, and we are targeting higher returns as we go forward, given the scale and magnitude of what we have established. Very exciting times to be part of this growth journey. For the ones who are celebrating Diwali, I wish you well. I hope you get some time off and get to celebrate with your family and friends. And we'll see you over the course of the quarter when we see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric, Ronald, and Nomura team for organizing this call. Thank you all the investors for taking the time to join this call. Please feel free to reach out if you have any further questions. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So in case investor, you have any question after the call, please feel free to drop email to management for your any question we missed. Thank you.
Thank you, management team. And thank you, everyone who joined the call. We'll close the call here now. Thank you.